Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Good morning and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Weiss King, your host, and I want to thank you for joining me this beautiful day. There are many things happening in the world of shamanism that I want to share with you, and I just hope that wherever you are, you're having a wonderful Saturday, and that the words that I speak and the sounds that you hear will somehow bless your day. Now, first thing that I want to do is congratulate Sandra Ingerman, my beloved teacher, has been awarded by the magazine Spirituality and Health. She was named as one of the top 10 spiritual heroes of 2013. And this will all be in the magazine coming up in November-December issue. She received this honor for teaching shamanism and especially for her Medicine for the Earth work. As you know, she has spent many years now doing ceremonies and teaching people about how to heal the waters of the earth and how to improve the environment using spiritual methods. Okay, and so it's wonderful to see her work acknowledged as a way to heal and shift consciousness in a positive way. The other people who were honored in this top 10 include India Ari, Adya Shante, Paige Ellenson, Chief Oren Lyons, Sister Simone Campbell, Stacy Keneally, Pema Chodron, Robert Ping, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. So it's an outstanding group of people that they have named as spiritual heroes for 2013. It's a great honor for her, and for any of you that are not familiar with her work, I would like for you to go out and get her book, Medicine for the Earth. It is just a phenomenal storehouse of wisdom and spiritual teaching, and it's something that everyone should become aware of as we move forward into the 21st century with all the problems that Mother Earth is suffering from, the pollution and the waters that have just been, destroyed, all the fresh waters in the world and a dying ocean. All of these things demand our attention. And not just our attention, but our love and our reaching out to them spiritually and blessing them and sending energy to them to restore themselves. Okay, now the editor of Spirituality and Health spoke with Sandra, and the full interview is on spiritualityhealth.com/spiritualheroes. So that's something you might want to look into. I just love her. She's the most wonderful teacher I've ever worked with. I learned so much from her. And she deserves all the accolades that people out there are ready to give her. Okay. Now, the second thing that I want to share with you is a company called The Sacred Science. It's sacred science, thesacredscience.com. You can go on their website. They have produced a documentary which was filmed in the jungles of the Amazon, where 8 very brave people went down. They were all suffering from terrible diseases, Parkinson's disease, breast cancer, diabetes, depression, just to name a few of the diseases. There were 8 of them that went down. They lived in seclusion for 1 month in the heart of the Amazon jungle. And these women took part in a powerful healing practice by Peru's indigenous medicine men, working with centuries-old plant remedies and spiritual disciplines. In their most desperate hour, these patients are forced to confront not only their physical ailments, but their own spiritual and psychological barriers to the process of healing. The documentary is just phenomenal, and you'll find that 5 of the 8 returned with real results. They were healed. 2 returned disappointed. It did not somehow work for them, and 1 did not come back at all. But out of 8 people, 5 were healed. And these indigenous shaman were using primarily plants, plant medicines from there in the Amazon. Now, you can go on their website. They did have a showing, a free showing of the documentary, but I believe that ended on the 17th, unless they've somehow extended it. But you can purchase the DVD for a very nominal fee. I think it's less than $20. And you can also buy a book that they created with like recipes of all the powerful sacred medicines being used by the shamans of the Amazon jungle, what they are and how to use them. And I mean, this is just a groundbreaking new film that will, I believe, wake the world up to the power of shamanism. Now, we've known for some time that plants have a lot of healing power. Most pharmaceutical drugs that the doctor prescribes to us came originally from some plant. And what these scientists did is they determined what specific chemical or element in that plant. And we know that plants being used for food and for healing is all part of the divine plan for us on Earth. In fact, in Genesis, God's told Adam that the plants were there to provide for all their needs, for food, medicine, and all their needs. So we know that the plants were already designed for these purposes, and mankind used to know how to use them. But as we progressed and science became so important in the world, and then everything had to be proven, if you couldn't see it under a microscope, or weigh it or measure it and prove that it exists, then it didn't exist. So much of our ancient teachings have been lost to the world. But now we're seeing with documentaries like The Sacred Science that, yes, plants can heal all of these diseases that our world is suffering from today. And that's how the shamanic teachings that Dr. Michael Harner teaches began, because he was studying with shaman down in the Amazon, and he saw them. This was back in the late 50s or early 60s. He saw them healing diseases that we have no cure for here in the United States with all of our medical breakthroughs. These were incurable diseases. And he saw that the shamans in the Amazon were healing these very diseases. And this was mind-boggling to him. I mean, these were primitive people. And they didn't know anything about medicine, as we know it, modern medicine. And yet they were able to heal incurable diseases. And that is how he started his search around the world to find out exactly what shaman were doing. And then he formed the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And of course, many people like me studied with him and learned how to do a spiritual form of healing. Now, we don't work with herbs and everything. However, in the Amazon, the shamans there all do work with the plants and, you know, the medicinal plants in the jungle there. So if you get a chance, go on thesacredscience.com and see what they're doing. And if possible, get that video and watch it. If not the video, get the book and find out exactly what plants do what, because so much of this knowledge has been lost to the world. Now, that brings me to something else that is happening, and she's not part of the shamanic world. However, she has discovered the importance of plants and knowing what they do and the healing that they can perform. Her name is Ashley Green, and she has been interviewed a couple of times, I believe, in Organic Gardening. And the most recent issue of it has a profile on her in an interview, which is absolutely wonderful. I'm just going to read an excerpt from it for you so that you understand exactly what she is doing. Ashley Green is program manager for the Sacred Seeds Project, an international effort to preserve both medicinal plants and traditional knowledge of how they are used to improve health. From her base at the William L. Brown Center at the Missouri Botanical Gardens, Glenn travels far and wide to establish a network of gardens and communities devoted to this important task. She has set up community gardens in isolated Peruvian mountain hamlets and remote Cambodian villages, and has shared planting work on American Indian reservations. Her next trip is to New Zealand, where she is assisting in the development of the New Zealand Herb Gardens, which, when open in a few years, will be the largest public gardens in the world devoted to medicinal herbs. Isn't that fantastic? People are waking up. They're beginning to realize that we have right at our fingertips all kinds of plants that can help us. And the knowledge has just been lost to humanity. And with all of our going in and developing and bulldozing and everything, many plants have been lost as well. Now, there is another shamanic healer that does work with plants, but he works with them in a different way. His name is Elliot Cowan, and he was on my show a few months ago. So you can go into the archives and pull up that show and listen to what he has to say. He began studying herbs when he was a teenager because he had a sick goat, and the vet didn't know what to do for it or didn't have anything that would help it. And he decided that there must be something out there that would help it. And he searched around and did some research and all and found what plants to use, and he cured his sick goat. And of course, this set him off and running to find more about how plants can heal. So he did he studied herbalism, that he studied with a medicine man in Mexico, and then he studied in England with a different form of medicine. Listen to my previous show with him and you'll find out all about what he does. But what I'm getting to is he works with plants, their healing power, but he does not use the physical plant. He does not make up a tea or a concoction of some kind with the physical plant and have his patient take that. He works strictly with the spirit of the plant. He goes in spirit to the plant, and he has worked with so many plants, he knows what they each do. He asks them, in spirit, how can you help this person? What will you do for this person that would help them? And so he has built a large file of what plants do what, and strictly working with the spirits of the plants. So when he works with someone, he may just lay his hands on their shoulders and call in the spirit of the plant and ask it to pour its energy through him and into this person. And it works. People get healed. And it's just amazing. He has a book out called Plant Spirit Medicine, which I would urge you to buy because it is just amazing the work that he's doing. And he does teach classes on how to do what he does. So there is a growing number of people in the world learning how to work with plants. And this is so wonderful because we have to reconnect with nature. Nature is part of us. We are part of nature. And all that we need for all that our bodies need is available to us if we know where to go for it and know how to ask for it. Now, of course, there are a lot of people that don't believe that plants have spirits. They don't believe animals have spirits either. But if you've ever owned a dog or an animal that you were very close to, and you looked into their eyes and saw their love and everything, you would never say that that dog did not have a spirit, okay? And plants have spirits as well. This was actually proven back way, gosh, in 1973, there was a groundbreaking book published called The Secret Life of Plants. And it's the fascinating account of the physical, emotional, and spiritual relations between plants and humans. The wonderful thing about this book is they did test after test with plants, fastening electrodes to the leaves and showing that the plants responded to music, responded to people's actions around them. For instance, if someone pulled up a plant next to other plants, they would kind of wilt. It showed also their curative powers. And this book, like I said, it was a groundbreaking book. It was reprinted in 2002, and it's just amazing. They talk about plants and ESP and how to communicate and how they can understand everything that we're doing and feel threatened by us or fearful of us or love us and produce enormous vegetables for us. There have been so many things that have happened over the last 50 or 60 years that have proven that plants respond to us and how we treat them. Now, you have to wonder in today's world, when we have companies like Monsanto genetically altering plants and inserting genes that could never be a part of a plant, human genes, fish genes, and of course, their herbicide, Roundup. They put that in the plants. So I wonder what the plant world is thinking about all of this and how it is going to affect the plants providing us food in the future. Because they understand that if we're harming them or we're doing something that is not good with them, they don't have to produce food for us. They can make a choice. So this is something that people need to get a grip on and understand that our whole livelihood in this world, we are totally dependent on the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom for our food. And if we mistreat it and do terrible things to it, then no doubt this is going to change our relationship with plants in the future. So, if you get a chance, take a look at The Secret Life of Plants. It's an amazing book, and all these other things have sort of built on it, I believe. Okay, now, living here in the United States, you're probably looking around and wondering, well, what do we know about plants? I know most people go out in the parks because that's where nature is anymore. It's you can't just go out in the field close to where you live. There is no field. It's all housing developments. But when you go to the parks or you go hiking up in the mountains, and you notice that there are all kinds of plants on the ground. I mean, they're random. They don't grow like humans try to grow plants. They don't grow in stately rows and in organized clumps. They just randomly grow wherever they sprout up. But there's a system involved. They know which plants to sprout up by that will help them because gardeners have found that there's such a thing as companion gardening, that certain plants, if you plant them together or near each other, they provide nitrogen or they provide certain things into the soil that the other plant needs. And so they flourish when they're planted together. So nature has always known this, of course, and humans have tried to just pluck just the one thing they want out of nature and then plant it all together in stately rows and don't let any weeds come in and don't let anything else come near it.
Since the beginning of time, when traditional shaman healers turned to the plant world, we have been using plants to heal people. This is what the ancient druids did in England and Ireland. This is what was practiced all over Europe and all around the world. Shamans, medicine women, medicine men have turned to the plant world to find healings. And we know that they work and are still continuing to work, but in a different way because the pharmaceutical companies have extracted just the part of that plant that they think will do the healing and put that into all of their prescription drugs because they can patent it that way. Okay, and so whatever they can't patent, you will never hear about. It does not go become anything known to the world. So anyway, living here in the United States, of course, you probably look around you and wonder what plants would actually help you. Most people think that whatever grows up wild in their yard is just a weed and they want to kill it immediately. They don't realize that some of those very plants that are growing up wild in the yard have amazing medicinal qualities to them. Even plants like dandelions are not only good as a food source, they have medicinal healing powers as well. When you go out into the forest and walk around among the trees, and you look down at the ground, and the ground is covered with every kind of plant you could imagine. And there's yarrow and wild wheat and all kinds of plants just that you don't understand what they are. You look down, and all you see is weeds. They're not weeds. These are valuable, amazing plants that can provide us with food and with medical help for whatever problems we're having. Now, Native Americans in this country have always practiced healing with medicinal plants, and a lot of that was discounted by the missionaries and the new settlers coming in from Europe. Some of them heeded it and learned how to do it, but for the most part, when doctors arrived and scientists arrived, everything changed. So, to start educating yourself a little bit about what is available in your area, another one of my teachers, Tom Brown, has a book called Tom Brown's Field Guide to Wild, Edible, and Medicinal Plants. You can probably find this in your local library and definitely in any bookstore out there. It's an amazing book that catalogs, oh, hundreds of plants here in the United States and how they can be used for food and how they can be used for medicine. That's Tom Brown's Field Guide to Wild, Edible, and Medicinal Plants. Now, Tom was taught by a very old Apache medicine man, from the time he was 7 years old up until I think he was 17 or 18 when grandfather passed on. And he learned not just about the plants and about living with nature, but he also learned a spiritual teaching that grandfather had gathered, a wisdom that he had gathered on his own by traveling all over this continent and down into South America and all over studying different methods that were being used in different tribes and among different people. And so he learned this wonderful spiritual teaching as well. Now, Tom Brown teaches classes in New Jersey. He is an amazing tracker. He's been called in to help find a lost child, even after maybe hundreds of people have trampled an area, you know, a huge group of volunteers out trampling through the forest looking for this person. Even so, he's been able to go in after them and find the prints of that child or that person and be able to lead them to where the body is. Because by that time, by the time they call him in, it's usually too late to find the person alive. But anyway, his first book was called The Tracker, and it was all about tracking. And then, of course, since then, he formed the school to teach people how to live in harmony with nature. It is a survival-type school, but not survival like most survival schools where you're taught to go out there and conquer nature and survive in spite of nature and how to, you know, attack it, so to speak. Tom teaches a way to live in harmony with nature and to understand that nature is your friend and that nature wants to help you and has everything available that you need if you only know how to do it or how to find it and how to use it. So he teaches wonderful survival courses and teaches about plants and healing with them and food plants and ways that you could live quite comfortably out in nature with nothing but a knife. And, of course, if you don't have a knife, you can always make one by sharpening the edge of a rock. So there are many things that he teaches. And he has done tremendous research on everything, too, along with all that he was taught by the Apache grandfather. So this book is only one of many of his books available to you. He's got books on how to survive in a catastrophe if you're in the heart of the city. And this is something we probably all should be aware of knowing how to do, because you never know when some calamity, an earthquake or storm or something might happen in your area, and it's good to know the steps you need to take in order to be safe and to survive. So he has a lot of books out there. Like I said, most of his books are available in public libraries, and so you can, you know, they're right at your fingertips. So it would be a good thing to begin to educate yourself about plants and what they do and how you can use them for so many different things. All of the things that we have in the world, we have made many of them from plants. And so, you know, all the help that we need is there. We just have to learn where it is and how to find it and how to use it. And, of course, that's what much is happening now. It's like this sacred seed gardens that Ashley Green is going around the world to help form, because these are all mostly medicinal plants that they're growing in these sacred gardens. You can watch a video that she did on YouTube called Sacred Seed. And these plants are sacred, and they are here to help us. So it's something, you know, to be aware of and to pay attention to. And I just can't tell you how happy I am that that more and more people in the world are beginning to return to the wisdom of the ancients and learn how to live in a better way than we have been living. We have a lot of conveniences in our lives, but it has been at a high cost to nature and to the planet. And so we have to turn this around if we want to see our future generations thrive in the future. Then we have to turn all of this around now and begin to treat the earth, Mother Earth, and the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom as sacred parts of our lives, sacred parts of our family. So this is something that is wonderful to me. The end of this month, Grandmother Florida Mayo, who is one of the 13 grandmothers, the international group of 13 indigenous grandmothers that have come together from all parts of the world. Well, Florida Mayo comes from South America, and she is now living in New Mexico. And the end of this month, I think it's the 25th and the 26th of October, she is doing a big workshop in New Mexico, and bringing in speakers from indigenous tribes and teaching about permaculture, teaching about growing herbs, teaching about how to work with healing with herbs and plants and everything. So this is something you can look up online. Just put in her name, Flor de Maya, and it will bring up her websites and the things that they are doing. But this is something, if you are able to make the trip, it's very economical to do this. I think it's $100 registration and then $20 for each workshop that each of these people is doing. So it's something that is very affordable, not like some of the teachers out there are charging thousands of dollars for their teaching, which was given to them by spirit. So it's kind of interesting to see how people are trying to make money on everything, including the sacred teachings that the Great Spirit has given to people. Okay, and I'm looking to see if I can get any more information on her gathering, because it's something wonderful. I'm going to try and be there myself, because I think this is so important to the planet, that especially for the United States, to learn more about what is available to us here in our own country, right at our fingertips and right in the closest wilderness or forest that we can go to. So she grew up in, like I said, South America. Her father was a local shaman, and her mother was a midwife and healer, and she has great teachings. And she draws on the Mayan ancestors and Nicaraguan ancestors and all to do the things that she does. And, of course, she has been a very active part of the 13 grandmothers. So, now getting back to shamanism, as Michael Harna teaches it, and as I and many others have practiced, of course, we work directly with the spirits for doing the healing. Elliot Cowan works with the spirit of plants, but we go to spirit teachers in the upper worlds. Now, they're not the spirits of deceased humans here on this plane, because most of them don't know much more than what they knew when they were alive. They have not evolved into the higher levels. And so what we do is we journey, what we call a journey. We drum, and it drops us into an altered state of consciousness, and we go in spirit into the upper world to meet with these amazing healing spirits. And they have the ability to remove intrusions that cause illness. Now, in the shamanism that Dr. Harna teaches and that is used in many parts of the world, we believe that if you have a localized illness in your body, such as a tumor or a diseased organ, that is caused by what we call an intrusion, which is an energy that has entered the body at that point and is literally feeding on the energy of the body. And so this can, in time, in the beginning, it's hardly noticeable. People aren't really aware of it. Maybe they're having stomach upsets, a little bit of acid reflux, and they think, oh, that's just what I ate. And later on, it gets worse and worse, and then eventually, over a long period of time, it can become cancer. But once the intrusion is removed, the body, which is this amazing creation, has the ability to kick in and heal itself. It's like if you have a thorn in your finger and you don't get the thorn out, the finger will swell up and fill with pus and be quite painful. But then if you gather the courage to get that needle and get that thorn out of there, an amazing thing happens. The body heals itself. Okay, and this is what happens with intrusions. They're like a thorn. And once the intrusion is removed from the body kicks in and heals itself. So we work with spirit helpers and power animals that are able to remove these intrusions. And many, many amazing physical healings happen and miracles occur. The thing about it is that in shamanism, miracles are not some rare event. It's something we expect to have happen, and it does. So there are many ways to heal. But, of course, healing with plants is a traditional way that has existed since the beginning of time, as well as the kind of spiritual healing of calling in the spirits and asking for their help. So there are many ways to heal, but shamanism and its return to the forefront of society and its acceptance in so many realms now is making people more and more aware that there's a lot more going on than what the eyes can see and the ears can hear. You know, we've been so programmed by scientists and doctors excuse me, to believe that, as I said before, if you can't see it with your eyes or see it under a microscope, if you can't measure it and weigh it and catalog it somehow where there's proof that it exists, then they deny its existence. Of course, I find it hard to believe that they would still hold to that, considering how much science advanced once the telescope was created, and they could actually see germs. They could actually see diseased cells and actually see what was happening to them. And it seems to me that they should have realized that, wow, you know, 100 years ago, we didn't even know there were germs, and now we can see them, so they do exist, even though we couldn't see them with our naked eye. So there might be other things that exist that we don't see with our naked eye. There's so much that the human eye does not see. We have a very limited range of vision in the whole light spectrum. And so this is something that, you know, people should be aware of, that we have this idea that what we call visible light is the only thing that's visible. But what it is the only thing that's visible to the human eye. And, of course, reptiles see in infrared. They can see your heat and everything. That's how they target you. And that's how they, you know, are aware of your presence and everything. Birds have actual feathers on their bodies that denote their sex, but they're not visible to the human eye. They can only be seen in ultraviolet, which is how birds and insects see. Insects and hummingbirds, and all can see the nectar in plants. In ultraviolet light, that nectar shows up, and they can see the nectar in plants, and that's how they know, you know, to go to specific plants. And so, you know, but the human eye does not see these things. There are many things around us that the human eye does not see. And, of course, there are also things that the human ear does not hear. Just like we all know that there's a whistle for dogs that is so high-pitched that it's the human ear does not hear it, but the dogs hear it, okay? So that's just an example. There are probably a million things out there that we don't hear or see because our vision and our hearing is limited to a certain range of frequencies. So these are things that ancient man was aware of, and shamanism was aware of. That's why we consider all life sacred. Trees, plants, everything that exists is alive and sacred and a part of this amazing earth garden that we live in. We all share this world together, and it's really important that we embrace all of creation as part of our family and treat it with respect and honor. Now, other things that we do in shamanism, for those of you who may not be that familiar with shamanic healing, we, besides healing illnesses, specific illnesses, localized illnesses in a body, we also work with the spirit of the person and their emotional system, their anger, their suppressed guilt and shame or fear. There's so many things that go into making up a human being. We're not just what the eye sees, and we're not just our actions in public. We have a whole world going on inside of us, in our minds and in our hearts, that are not visible to the public. We have our own dreams and desires and our own fears and our own shames or guilt from things that have happened in the past. Because the one thing that humans were blessed or perhaps cursed with is memory. You'll notice most of the animal kingdom, and I'm sure the plant kingdom as well, live in the moment. They live in the now. And this is all that exists for them, is what is right now. But humans, we carry around with us a whole set of baggage, carrying all our memories, carrying all our heartbreaks, all our dreams and aspirations, and all the failures and all the hurts and pain. And, you know, we carry around a lot of that, and we get caught up in remembering things that are long gone and still beating ourselves up about them, or worrying about the future and making plans and then not following through because we decide, well, you know, it didn't work before, nothing ever works for me, and why should I do this? So healing for a human being involves healing of all these aspects of the human persona, not just the physical body, but the mind and the heart and the spirit. And that's what we do in shamanism, because it's all one thing. You can't fix the thorn out of the finger problem and ignore all the rest, because there's so much that all works together in a person's body. Our mind affects our body. How we think affects our body. And our fears and our stuffed emotions like anger affect our body. So a shaman works with all parts of the human that we are working with. And one of the things we do is called soul retrieval. Now, this is not the soul like the Baptist Church speaks about it and where it's going to go after you die, to heaven or hell. What we call the soul is your life force energy. that energy that activates your body and creates your life. Okay, and sometimes when a person has a traumatic experience, say they were in an automobile accident and nearly died and suffered terrible damage to their bodies and terrible pain and everything, sometimes a part of a person that cannot deal with what's happening will leave. It will just say, I'm not dealing with this, I'm out of here. And so what a shaman can do is go into the spirit world and ask either our power animal or our teacher to help us find the lost part of this person that needs to come home. Now, most of us have a lot of pieces of us that have left. We've had a lot of traumas in our lives, and we've stuffed a lot of this and not dealt with a lot of it and everything. So what happens when the shaman goes out and the teacher or the power animal, they see a much bigger picture than we see. They see the past lives, the future lives, what patterns there are that have been working in this person's life through lifetime after lifetime, perhaps. And they know exactly what part of that person needs to come back in the now moment to help this person in their lives today with whatever they're dealing with. And so we go out and we find that part of them. And, of course, we'll ask it why it left, or most oftentimes we'll find that part still at the scene of whatever happened, like the automobile accident. They're still there and still in terror and pain and everything. So what we do is we heal that part and bring back the life force energy of it and put it back in the person. So they don't have to deal with the process of all the emotional stuff that happened at that time. It's not like psychotherapy where you try to find the lost memories, and which are usually lost soul parts that don't come back on their own. But you try to find the lost memories and then try to deal with what your emotions were and why you were feeling it and how to, you know, process through it so that you can be effective in your life today. In shamanism, when we go out and find the soul part, we heal it right there on the spot of where whatever it was that happened to it. And we don't bring back the traumatic memories and the traumatic emotions and all that were a part of that scene. We only bring back the life force energy and put it back into that person so that now they are more fully here and more able to live their life in a way that is healthy and happy, and they can go forward. So this is just some of the things that we do in shamanism. Now, you can look at my website, which is shamanskeep.com. If you have questions about any of this, you can communicate with me at caroline@shamanskeep.com. And I would be happy to work with any of you that have issues you're dealing with or that need help, either physically, mentally, or emotionally with problems in your lives, because this is an alternative form of healing that has been time-tested and proven to work since the beginning of time. So join with me 2 weeks from now for another exciting show, and I'm going to have a guest next time. So be sure and keep in touch. And until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.